Louise Laurent is an assistant professor in reproductive medicine at UCSD, and she's also a member of our the Center for Regenerative Medicine, which is, of course, sponsored by Serum, at Scripps. And Louise and I have worked closely together and very productively together for several years. She was my postdoc very briefly before she exceeded my abilities to mentor her. She's going to talk about the application of genomics to embryonic stem cell and iPS cell biology, and the work she's going to talk about was just accepted for publication today in Cell Stem Cell.
Okay. All right, so as Jean mentioned, we co-direct a very large group at the moment, and our focus, if you can call it a focus, is the systems biology of pluripotency. Jean is giving me 10 minutes max, so we're going to talk about one aspect of our work today, and that is the genetic instability of human pluripotent stem cells. So I don't know if I can do two things at once, so I'll give it a try. Okay, so as we have been talking about, there are several potential applications for human pluripotent stem cells. And these include, of course, the clinical applications, which include cell therapy and predictions of drug toxicity and efficacy for drug development. In addition, of course, there's disease modeling and basic research in cellular and organismal development. Now, why do we care about genetic stability? Well, the consequences of genetic instability can be quite significant. For example, we all are aware that in cell therapy, genetic instability can lead to risks of tumorigenicity. That is a paramount concern of the FDA and, of course, patients and physicians. In terms of drug toxicity and efficacy predictions and for disease modeling, we want to make sure that the cells we're studying in the dish have phenotypes that reflect either the patient and or the disease phenotype. And if we have genetic instability going on, that could be having serious consequences on cellular phenotype, which may lead us astray in our conclusions. And then finally, for research purposes, even if we are willing to accept some genetic abnormalities, the fact that those abnormalities may be changing over time is of great concern. So in our approach, we started with 324 samples, of which I've listed here. There were a large number of embryonic stem cell and iPS samples, as well as some primary cell and tissue samples. I didn't list another 10 samples that we designed as mixtures of normal and abnormal cells so that we could look at the sensitivity for picking up genetic abnormalities. So the technology that was used was a SNP genotyping microarray, which had 1 million loci interrogated. But a SNP is a single nucleotide polymorphism. All of us have these SNPs in our genomes. What it refers to is that at certain positions in our genomes, there is a known variation in the human population. And so these arrays target those so that we can tell, for example, whether something comes from the maternal or paternal copy. We can look at the number of copies in that position. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then finally, we used algorithms to detect copy number variations. And so these allow us to detect duplications or deletions in the DNA of cells. So this is just an overview of our results. So to orient you, I've listed here all of the chromosomes. So 1 through 22, and then the X chromosome. And then everything is color-coded so that the results for the embryonic stem cells are given in red here, iPS in blue, and non-pluripotent cells in green. And I've shown pretty much all the duplications that were detected. And so, for example, if we look here on the X chromosome, we can see that there were duplications of the whole chromosome in several embryonic stem cell lines. The lighter red refers to the fact that there was a duplication in part of the population studied. And then the blue refers to the fact there was a duplication of the whole X chromosome in an iPS sample. So if you stand back at 20,000 feet, you see a lot of red. And that indicates that there are a lot of genetic abnormalities present in embryonic stem cell cultures. And we've done the stats on this, and it is higher than in the non-pluripotent samples. I'll give some examples showing graphs of that in a minute. The other point is that there are certain regions here, you can see, have recurrent areas of duplication. And in the next figure, I'll highlight two of these. One of these is on chromosome 12. As you can see here, there are a number of embryonic stem cell lines that have duplications of the whole chromosome, as well as some that only have duplications in this small region here. So we refer to this as a recurrent area of duplication. And of interest, this region is just downstream of the NANOG gene, which is strongly associated with pluripotency. We've looked very carefully. It actually does not include the NANOG gene itself, but is downstream of it. Here, we have another region on chromosome 20, where, as you can see, we have duplications in many embryonic stem cell lines, as well as one iPS line. And we know for a fact, since we studied the original fibroblast line from which this was derived, that this was a new duplication that occurred during the course of reprogramming or passage. And here you can see, actually, that this region is upstream of DNMT3B, which is a DNA methyltransferase, which, again, is highly expressed in pluripotent cells. So these were the two most highly enriched regions in pluripotent cells. So I said I'd give you some graphs here talking about overall genetic stability of ES, IPS, and non-PSCs, showing that in terms of zero copy events, so these are events where both copies are lost, there's no real difference between the three cell types studied. However, looking at one copy events, and this refers to single deletion. So as you know, we get one copy of every gene from mom and one from dad. So one copy event means that we've lost one of them. And here you can see that the red tracing is slightly but significantly offset from the other one, showing that iPS cells tend to accumulate one copy events, so one copy deletions. Looking at the three copy graph here, we see the blue line deviating, and those are the ES cells, showing that duplications tend to occur in ES cells. We can see that the distribution is not equal. Here it shows, since the whole line is shifted, that these deletions occur very frequently in many iPS lines, whereas here we see, since it's only a few of these samples that are shifted, that few ES lines show duplications. Of course, then the next thing, of course, in our group is that we're looking at the functional consequences of these deletions and duplications. Now, I wanted to show here that we can actually observe these changes happening in culture. So, and it's also to demonstrate that anyone can learn how to read genomic data. So here, what I show is what we call the B allele frequency. So all this means is, remember that at the loci that we're looking at, you can have one of two variants. We call them variant A and variant B. And it's arbitrary as to whether, for example, variant A might mean having a cytosine in that position, and B might be having an adenosine in that position. But for example, each dot here represents one locus in the genome that's interrogated. So here, all these dots down here reflect that at these loci, the genotype is AA. They're the same, and they're the A locus. If you see something here, it means that it's a heterozygous locus, it's AB. And up here, these are the BBs. Okay, so this is normal. This is a normal BAF or B allele frequency plot. Here, though, this is the same line. I don't know if I can do math now. 66 passages later, and you can see this area looks pretty similar, but here we see splitting of the heterozygous cluster here. And what this means is that there's likely to have been a duplication. We actually have other data from the same samples that confirm that there are duplications here. And what this means is that if this area is duplicated, a SNP that was AA will now be AAA, but it will still be red on this line. You can't go any lower than this line. A BB SNP, so like this guy over here, stays up here because it's now BBB. However, the ones here, depending on which copy was duplicated, will either turn from AB to AAB or AB to ABB, and therefore split into these two subclouds here. So this sort of pattern, going from here to here, indicates a duplication event. And we see this many, in many cases in our data. Here, actually, I wanted to demonstrate that, you know, we in the stem cell field, we're very aware that we should be either karyotyping or doing SNP genotyping to look at the genetic stability of our lines as we passage them. However, this is a demonstration that when we do differentiations, we should also be tracking the genetic stability of the differentiated cells. This is a cell line that was differentiated over 7 days from pluripotent ES line into a cardiomyocyte precursor. And so on day two, this actually looks like our day zero sample. Things look pretty good. This is the B allele frequency plot here. We see our three clouds, our AA, AB, and BB clouds here, as usual. However, 5 days later, on day seven, we see the splitting in several regions of the genome. And the splitting is not as dramatic as the previous slide because these duplications have not taken over the whole population of cells. So they're a portion of the population of cells. We've estimated that in this a degree of splitting represents about 20 to 30% of the cells in the population. This is more like 80% of the cells in the population having a duplication. So basically, we want to highlight a few things from our findings. One is that genetic aberrations are quite common in human pluripotent stem cell cultures. We would like to emphasize that karyotyping is probably not sufficient to pick up a lot of these duplications and deletions, and therefore higher resolution methods are preferable. Second, there are definite regions of recurrent genetic instability. From our studies, they appear to preferentially occur near known pluripotent genes. In addition, embryonic stem cells tend to accumulate duplications in a small number of cell lines, whereas in iPS cells, we see deletions in many of the cell lines. Genetic aberrations can arise during routine culture, as we have all been aware of for a very long time, but also they can occur very quickly during the differentiation process. So thank you very much. I would like to thank all the folks. Actually, you know, this is such a moving target. Sorry for the interns who are new since this picture, but I'd like to thank all the folks in our lab. They've worked extremely hard and are great to work with. And these are all their names. And of course, we couldn't do any of this work without our great collaborators. Thanks.
Okay, we have time for a couple of questions. Some of you are running out of the room because you want to go karyotype or SNP genotype your embryonic stem cells.
We could take them at the end as well.
Yeah, we can do that at the end. There is somebody up there, though. There's always somebody up there.
No, yeah. You can't, because it won't go on tape, so there won't be any question. You'll be a hollow.
Yeah, so great talk, Louise. Evan Eichler's been talking a lot about some of these regions in the genome that are preferentially duplicated in humans and this sort of thing, and I'm wondering if any of the regions that you're picking out in the ES cells or the IPS are overlapping with any of his sort of regions that seem to be prone to these expansions or whatever. Is there some common ground there?
I have to admit I haven't looked at that to look at the overlap. One thing that, of course, we cannot distinguish is whether these are things that are occurring more frequently in the lines, in the pluripotent lines, or whether they occur in all cell lines and they're being selected for in the culture conditions. I actually suspect it's the latter, but time will tell.
We do have one more question here.
Louise, nice talk. So actually, I think you just got to the answer to my question there, which is the culture conditions. And some of the early work looking at gene expression profiling of human ES cells showed that the gene expression profiles tracked more closely with which technician was growing the cells than which cell lines they actually were. And so I'm wondering, with such a large group of, an impressive panel of cells, how did you begin to approach for culture conditions? Were you doing stuff in-house, or was this done independently with researchers and then tracking the data there?
Yeah, so this was done in a relatively non-selective way, other than us knowing the collaborators who contributed the cells and knowing that they knew what they were doing. So they were, it was up to them how they cultured the cells. So we actually got a large variety of culture conditions and passaging methods. When we do the analysis on the sub and the whole group, we don't really see strong trends. However, it probably is because there are a lot of untracked variables that are different as well, that kind of muddy the water. We know that if we do very careful analyses using the same postdoc with multiple culturing conditions, we start seeing differences. But that's ongoing work.
So Louise, Jeff Wall has a question.
Yeah, I just want to continue on Travis's and two specific issues. One is when you see these cells that now you've identified as having chromosomal alterations, have you checked their P53 status to see whether that's been lost or modified, mutated during culture? And secondly, does oxygen tension play a role in determining whether such instability occurs?
Yeah, so in terms of the individual genes, we haven't actually done that. So that's something that is the next step. The other thing is in terms of hypoxia. Now, the trouble is, as I mentioned before, we didn't specify for people, you know, whether they were to culture things in a specific condition or not. So we do have some hypoxia samples. If we do the whole group analysis, it doesn't really seem to track very much with that.
So, Jean?
If you use lower oxygen, you may mitigate the problem.
Yeah.
That's really the issue.
Right. So, so we don't see a trend in our data, but again, we'd have to do sort of side-by-side analyses with multiple replicas to actually tease that out.